It's the Sound Kitchen.
Yummy.
It's the Sound Kitchen.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
You're listening to the Sound Kitchen.
Yummy.
And Susan Owensby's cooking.
Bienvenue and welcome to the Sound Kitchen, where you never know what you'll be served. I'm Susan Owensby. It's Saturday, the 8th of June, the 159th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 260 days left in 2024, and my throat is kind of bad. Sorry about my voice, everyone. Erwan is not with us today, but we have the charming Jeremy Boucher with us to mix the show. And once again, dear baby brother, also known as Paul Myers, has left his ringside seat at the French Open to come cook with us. Say hello, baby brother.
Hello. Hello, big sister.
So you want to know why Paul stifles a laugh every single week when he says hello? It all dates back to an ancient radio show with comedians George Burns and Gracie Allen. Every night when they signed off, George would say to Gracie, "Say goodnight, Gracie," and she would say, "Goodnight, Gracie." There's another really bad one in the same vein. There's a person in a difficult situation, and he says to someone standing by, "Call me a cab." And the person answers, "Yeah, you guessed it. You're a cab." That just, it's terrible we laugh at that. It just shows, goes to show you, Paul and I share the same really bad sense of outdated humor.
No, I don't think it's bad. It's just different.
Oh, okay. That's a nice way to put it. So, baby brother, I watched the film about those tennis goddesses, the sisters Serena and Venus Williams, this week. Did you ever see them play?
I did at the French Open. Venus wasn't so great on clay. She struggled. But Serena was fantastic. She won three times here, 2002, 2013. I can't remember the other time. And I saw the 2013 final against Maria Sharapova, and she was serving for the match. And all I remember was the ball going up and her hitting it. And it went for an ace. And then she hit another big serve. Sharapova got back to 30-15. And then Serena threw the ball up when she was at 40-15. And the racket bounce. The other court, that was all you heard. It was, you know, whack, ball bounced, and then it hit the back covers. Whoa. And she was champion. And so it was phenomenal serving. It was really brilliant. And in the press conference afterwards, she said, "Well, yeah, I was nervous. And when I'm nervous, there are two ways. Plan A is to hit the ball hard. Plan B, hit the ball harder." And I was like, "All right, that's Serena Williams for you." And it was, everybody goes, "Wow, that was fantastic. You were holding your nerve." And she said, "Well, no, actually, I wasn't. The way to hold my nerve was to just hit hard. And it worked because these things were flying." And it was just a wonderful way to finish a championship. And of course, there was always a bit of needle between Sharapova and Serena Williams. So it's fantastic. Oh. Really brilliant. Anyway, so yes, I did see them play. And Serena, well, she would just bring theatre to the court. It wasn't just winning. It was winning a la Serena. It was agony. She would stress and strife around the court. But she'd get there from 5-2 down in the deciding set. She'd just go on one of those Serena rolls and just win the next five games.
Wow.
And the other person just wouldn't touch the ball.
Wow. I'm jealous. Jealous. Because anyway. watching old matches on TV is not the same.
No, some of them were just epic. This woman is just bringing a whole life story onto this court. And afterwards, yeah, she'd explain it as, "I tried, you know, and that's it."
How cool.
She was great, great, great personality.
So what's happened this week at Roland Garros? Okay, wait. Okay, so we can do this forever. What really slayed you and knocked you out this week at the Roland Garros?
This week, what really knocked me out was the Novak Djokovic. Novak Djokovic winning in five sets against the 23rd seed, Francisco Cerundolo. He did it with a bad knee. He aggravated a knee injury during the match when he was sliding around. And for about 45 minutes while all the medicines were kicking in, he was just an ordinary player. You could see he couldn't serve properly. He was just letting certain shots go for points. He wasn't chasing after drop shots. But he was prolonging the match while waiting for all the legal medicines to have an effect. And the other player, Cerundolo, just couldn't kill him off. And so it was, he's very close to losing. And if Cerundolo doesn't do it in four sets, the old Djokovic is going to come back. And the old Djokovic did come back. And obviously with his movement restricted, he just pinned Cerundolo down on the backhand, which was Cerundolo's weaker side. And of course, it was just cross-court backhand to cross-court backhand. And Djokovic wasn't moving. He didn't have to move because he is just so precise. He just pinned the ball back to Cerundolo's backhand. And Cerundolo couldn't maneuver onto his forehand, or he just didn't want to risk it. And he just looked at a tactician, a brilliant player, whether you like him or not. You just saw the skill of just saying, I can't move, but I'm actually going to make sure that you can't move either. And having the ability to just put the ball deep time after time after time, or to somebody's weak point. And it was tactically brilliant. But of course, then Djokovic, he withdrew because of the injury.
Right. So I read your article.
Yeah. So that was my favorite match in a way, because you just saw the brain that goes into being brilliant. I mean, he trains hard. They all train hard. They all work hard. But then there's a point where you just have to have the cussedness not to call it a day. And if you are going to retire, you're going to retire on the back of a victory rather than during a match. And so you saw a bit of the stubbornness and, you know, the obduracy of why Djokovic has got to 24 Grand Slam singles trophies, which is, of course, a record. You saw it there. And it was, yeah. I can see why you're so difficult to play against when you're fit.
This was a man who was
injured. He was on one leg. And of course, for Cerundolo, if you can't beat Djokovic when he's on one leg, when are you going to do it? You know, when he's retired?
Exactly.
That was fascinating.
When Djokovic is 10 years older?
Yeah.
Voila.
Yeah.
Voila.
So that was my favorite match, really, because just saw Djokovic, why he's so good. It's wonderful.
Still to come, the quiz, your answers to the bonus question on the Listener's Corner with Paul, and some really good music, so don't touch that dial.
I am Okwe Victor. Hello, from the Kumi Central RFI Club in Kampala, Uganda.
Your appetite up and running? Good, because it's time for the quiz. On the 4th of May, I asked you a question about the Cannes Film Festival. A film had just been added to the lineup. You were to refer to our article, French stars Omar Sy and Eva Green, part of 2024 Cannes Film Festival jury, and send in the answer to these questions. What is the name of that last-minute film, and what is the name and nationality of the director? Paul, what's the answer?
Well, to quote our article, there have been late additions to the festival's lineup in recent days, including The Seed of the Sacred Fig by the Iranian director Mohammad Rasulov, who has faced prison time for criticizing the government. It is unclear if he will be able to attend the festival. He was able to attend the festival, as we reported a few days later. Rasulov left Iran without official permission after being sentenced to 8 years in prison and flogging for national security crimes. As he said at the time, "I had to choose between prison and leaving Iran. With a heavy heart, I chose exile." 52-year-old Rasulov is already known for There Is No Evil, which won the top prize at the Berlin Film Festival 4 years ago, and for A Man of Integrity, highly praised at Cannes in 2018, but which resulted in a string of travel restrictions, prison sentences, and filmmaking bans in Iran. In 2023, he was unable to take up an invitation to join the Cannes competition jury because he was under detention. The Seed of the Sacred Fig not only won the longest stand-in ovation at this year's festival, 12 minutes, imagine 12 minutes, but it won the Fipreski Award from the jury of the International Federation of Film Critics, a special award given at international film festivals. In addition to the quiz question, there was the bonus question: what book made the greatest difference in your life and how? You'll hear the answers later in the Listener's Corner, so please stay with us.
The winners of this week's quiz are RFI Listener's Club member Sahadat Hossein from Kishoreganj, Bangladesh. Sahada is also the winner of this week's bonus question. He wrote, "The first book I read in my life was a drama book. My father used to perform plays with the people of the village. I quietly read one of their books, Revenge of Murder. It made a big difference in my life because through it, I learned the joy of reading. I might not have become a reader if it weren't for that book. I don't even remember the name of the author, but I loved it." Congratulations, Sahadat. Finding the book that sparked the joy of reading in my daughter was one of my major goals as a parent. Also on the list of lucky winners this week is Shivindu Paul, the president of the RFI Mitali Listeners Club in Murshidabad, India. Hello, Shivindu. And there's RFI Listeners Club member Sakawat Hossein from Sylhet, Bangladesh. Last but not least, there are RFI English listeners Bubble from the Friends Radio Club in Naugaon, also Bangladesh, and our brother journalist Suresh Agrawal from Odisha in India. Congratulations to this week's winners, and thanks to each and every one of you who wrote in. This past Tuesday was the 35th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square crackdown in Beijing, when the People's Liberation Army broke up the pro-democracy student protests. According to various reports, anywhere from hundreds to thousands of students were killed. One of the student leaders, Wang Dan, after two periods of imprisonment, was allowed to emigrate to the U.S. He currently lives in San Francisco, where he leads the Dialogue China think tank. He was in Paris recently and came to RFI for an interview, which you read in our article, Tiananmen Square at 35, Top Chinese Dissident Looks Back. In the interview, Wang Dan is asked, how did 4 June 1989 change China? What does he answer? That's your question. Again, reread our article, Tiananmen Square at 35, Top Chinese Dissident Looks Back, and send in Wang Dan's answer to RFI's question, how did 4 June 1989 change China? You'll find our article on the Sound Kitchen page on our website, rfienglish.com, as well as on the Sound Kitchen and the RFI English Listeners Forum Facebook pages. Paul, what's this week's bonus question?
It is, what is the ideal human relationship? It was suggested by Debashish Gope from West Bengal in India. The ideal human relationship, what does that mean to you?
Ooh, that requires some thinking. What about you, baby brother?
So you're not thinking.
No, I'm not thinking. You go first. What's the ideal human relationship, Paul, for
it
you?
It will be, somebody with whom you can be ordinary yourself. That means, for me, I would say, to share your hopes, your fears, your dreams, your ambitions, your regrets. Maybe there have been quite a few, but someone you can share the entirety of yourself with, that there's no hiding. And that obviously, that comes back to questions we've had about friendship and family. So I would say those are my ideal human relationships, which I think denote friendships, really, over the years. People you can turn to when you're on a high or in a low or in a something of a slump, and you can reboot your lives. Yeah, that would be my ideal human relationship.
Like the way you feel about me, right?
And the Sound Kitchen family. And you?
A relationship with lots of freedom. Yeah. No judgment and plenty of support. Mm. Just love.
Love.
That simple.
Love and care, yeah.
Yeah.
It is that simple, yeah.
What about you? What's your idea of the ideal human relationship? Remember, we're always happy to hear your ideas for bonus questions, so please send them in. You have until the 1st of July to get your answers to the quiz and the bonus question in. Be sure to tune in on the 6th of July to hear if your answer wins a prize. As always, be sure you include your postal address with your postal code. And don't forget to let me know if you are a Miss, a Ms., a Mrs., or a Mr. I don't want to get it wrong.
Send your quiz answers to english.service@rfi.fr. That's english.service@rfi.fr. You can also text your answer to the Sound Kitchen mobile phone. Dial +336 31 12 96 82. That's +336 31 12 96 82. Always include your postal mailing address, and if you have one, your RFI Club membership number.
I am Yusundu. Hello, RFI English.
Now, more from and about you. It's time for the Listener's Corner. Take it away, baby brother.
The question you answered for this week was, what book made the greatest difference in your life and how? For Radhakrishna Pillai, it was Discovery of India by the first Prime Minister of India, Jawaharlal Nehru. Radhakrishna wrote, "This book inspired me to take up Indian history and culture as a subject for my higher studies. It was a turning point in my life. Moreover, my hobby of travelling was inspired by this book." Dipita Chakrabarty was also especially inspired by a book from an Indian politician. She wrote, "The book that has made a big difference in my life is Igniting Minds, authored by India's most influential former president, Dr. Abdul Kalam. He was born into a poverty-stricken family. By dint of courage and determination, he earned the title Missile Man of India for his pioneering work on the development of India's ballistic missile and launch vehicle technology. The book taught me to dream big and not settle for the ordinary when I know that the extraordinary is well within my reach. This can be brought about by working hard and developing whatever talent God gave me to achieve my ambition in life. Dr. Kalam discusses the positive vision that can transform the future of a nation and about how our trapped energies can be freed to achieve the impossible. The book, aptly titled Ignited Minds, has the power to make a difference and contribute to the growth and progress of our nation. Father Steve Wara's most influential book is Left to Tell, Discovering God Amidst the Rwandan Holocaust by Immaculée Ilibagiza with Steve Irwin. For the why part of the question, Father Steve wrote, I quote for you from the horse's mouth, the First Lady of Rwanda, who wrote, I am humbled by the extraordinary spirituality that shines throughout Immaculée Ilibagiza's story of terror, endurance, healing, and forgiveness. As a Rwandan, I am proud that we can look beyond the misconceived differences that resulted in the murder of so many of our men, women, and children in 1994. Immaculée's account of genocide survival is truly astonishing. It gives us hope of recovering the divisions deliberately created by those with self-serving agendas and no thought of humanity. Everyone should read this story, survivors as well as perpetrators. I hope that all can experience Immaculée's profound spiritual transformation and be inspired to work for a united nation and world. Helmut Mart wrote, there were many books and booklets which were important for me in my life. I think the most impressive and most important were the diaries of Victor Klemperer. Klemperer was a German novelist and professor of French literature and language, and Jewish. His diaries began in January 1933 and ended a few months after the end of Hitler's dictatorship in 1945. In his book, Victor Klemperer vividly describes life in the Third Reich, especially from the perspective of a Jew. We learn how the freedom of people, especially Jews, is increasingly restricted, how the air becomes thinner and thinner, and how the harassment increases. But you also learn how to maintain your dignity in such a world, how to live in inner resistance, and also that not everyone in the country took part in these crimes. There were friends who supported him and helped him, especially among the Sorbs, who also refused to submit. More than any other book, this book made me realize that you have to go through your life with your eyes open, that you always have to question the words of politicians and the media at all times, and that it is important to speak out and resist.
Wow. Thanks to y'all, I have quite a few books added to my library list. Muhammad Shamim wrote, I like reading books of different genre. Very recently, I read the famous book by Korean writer Cheon Mayong Kwan, Whale. It's become one of my favorite books. It keeps me glued to it for hours. The book covers many aspects of life, journeys, love, life, revenge. It inspires people to think positively and is an inspiration for those who feel that they've missed opportunities in the earlier part of their life. The book also teaches us about the importance of timing. In this modern world, slight delays can cause great losses. In many instances, delays can even become dangerous. For example, if a minor clash arises among the people of a particular locality and the government's action is delayed, it may grow into a riot. Prompt action would have nipped the problem in the bud. If a situation demands immediate action, appropriate action should be taken to ensure that the situation does not get out of control. Any amount of delayed action will not improve things. There's a famous saying, justice delayed is justice denied. Delayed action is useless and dangerous. Whale has a lot of universal wisdom. Cheon Myung Kwan shows that you should take the opportunity and live life to the fullest. It certainly changed my perspective towards life and helped me live my life in a better way. That's great, Muhammad. That goes on my library list, too. I've recently been reading novels by Koreans whose history I'm not at all familiar with or culture. It's a real eye-opener, especially as my father fought in the Korean War. Boy, I wish he were still around. I have so many questions for him, although often veterans won't discuss the wars they fought in. My father never did, but we didn't know to ask either. So here's what I've learned. Ask your elders questions while there's still time to do so. Ah, there's an English classic on the list here, Paul.
And I will say there's a conflict of interest here. I read The Mayor of Casterbridge as a teenager. And this is from Jayanta Chakrabarty, and it brought back lots of memories. He wrote that Thomas Hardy's The Mayor of Casterbridge helped mould his character. This is what he wrote. It's about the rise and fall of Michael Henchard after he decides to auction off his wife and baby daughter while drunk. Later in life, he becomes wealthy and socially powerful, but fails miserably to learn from his mistakes. I learned the basic lesson to always make a balanced and considerate decision at the critical moments I may face in life. This saves me from tragic suffering, despite having good intentions and behaviour. The novel explores themes of fate, guilt, and the consequences of one's actions in real life. Michael's character highlights the valuable message that a willful and impulsive nature can often make one blind to the sensitivity of a situation. The harsh treatment meted out to Michael's wife while she sought dignity and respect in the home and society has aroused a poignant appeal in my heart for the necessity and urgency of women's empowerment for societal change. In my opinion, The Mayor of Casterbridge is a fabulous literary guide to enhance one's character. Debashish Gope was also moved by a novel. He wrote from Sarat Chandra's novel Srikant, I was inspired to acquire qualities like patience, hard work, and fearlessness. And then we have the practical. Karuna Kantapal votes for, as he wrote the book Rich Dad and Poor Dad by Robert T. Kiyosaki and Sharon Lechter, because it changed my lifestyle by teaching me how to earn and invest money. Rafik Kondakar's important book is The Lives of the 100 Most Famous People in the World, which is a book he gave to his mother. This is what he wrote. After reading the book, my mother told me I must choose an honest profession, and I did. I decided to become a teacher. My mother was very pleased. I am now an honest teacher. I respect all, and I am respected. The book, thanks to my mother, helped me make the greatest decision in my life. And we'll end with Ashik Ekbal Tokon, who hopefully will turn his answer into an essay for us. He wrote that the classic novel Patha Panchali by Bibhutishi Baban Bandopadhyay made a significant difference in his life. This is what he wrote. Through the pages of Patha Panchali, I discovered a world of simplicity, beauty, and profound emotional depth. The story of a young Apu and Durga's discovery of a train in their remote Bengali village resonated deeply with me, sparking a lifelong curiosity and love for the natural world. Shortly after reading this story, I had the opportunity to visit my ancestral village. The experience was transformative. As I travelled by train and bus through the picturesque countryside, I felt an unmeasurable happiness, much as Apu did. The lush green fields, rivers, and orchards of mangoes, lychees, and jackfruit created a vivid, lasting impression in my mind. Patha Panchali instilled in me a passion for travel and a profound appreciation for nature. It taught me to find joy in the simplest of experiences and to seek out beauty in every corner of the earth. It is a testament to the enduring power of storytelling and its ability to transform lives. And there you have it. Remember, everyone, this week's bonus question is, what is the ideal human relationship? Which was suggested by Debashish Gope from West Bengal in India. Do you have a bonus question idea? Well, if so, send it to us at The Sound Kitchen, all one word, no spaces, at rfi.fr.
That's it for today's Listener's Corner. Thanks, everyone, for participating. Boy, that was a good question. People really went, and we've got a lot of readers out there.
Yeah, that is really, really cool.
And a special thanks to Paul Myers for hanging out in the kitchen with us.
A pleasure as always. You know that.
Good afternoon. This is Samuel Francis. I'm calling from the sunny island of Jamaica in the Caribbean. You're listening to The Sound Kitchen with Susan Owensby.
Okay, my friends, it's time to clear the table and wash the dishes. Thanks for joining us in The Sound Kitchen, and keep those cards, letters, emails, and text messages coming. Many thanks to Jeremy Boucher for mixing the show, and thanks to you for listening. Be sure and tune in next week for the answer to the question about the real EU Green Deal and the disinformation campaign surrounding it. The Sound Kitchen podcast is ready for you every Saturday on the RFI English website, rfienglish.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today, it's music from Susan, and I'll share with you a lovely song written and sung by a woman I met just 2 weeks ago in Switzerland, Anne Malcolm. Thanks to my beloved girlfriend, Emily, who insisted we meet. You'll adore each other. I know it, she said, and she was right. Instant connection. Cool woman, this Anne Malcolm, and gifted. Anne Malcolm is an American, but she's been living in Switzerland forever. She's a classical saxophone player and had a nice career playing with symphony orchestras, but then decided to concentrate on singing jazz. How'd that happen? I asked her. She told me she'd always sung, even while in the music conservatory studying saxophone. It's all one, she told me. When I sing, I think instrumentally. When I play, I'm thinking about singing. When you hear me sing, you'll know I have a close relationship with the saxophone, and vice versa. The song Anne wanted me to play for you from her album The Crystal Paperweight is called Evening. She wrote the lyrics, which were inspired by an evening in Greece on the island of Crete. She was looking at another island, Zikonos, which she said looked to her like a sleeping man. And so she wrote the verse, and inspired by Debussy, her friend the arranger Tom Harrell put it to music. She told me she had her saxophone in the booth with her at the recording studio. On a lark, she picked it up and began improvising with the musicians, and it was perfect. Everyone agreed. In one take. Yeah, pretty magic. That never happens. So you'll hear in this song, Evening, Anne Malcolm's poetry, her singing, and her saxophone playing. It's lovely, and I hope you like it as much as I do. Thanks to my M for the introduction to my newest major gal pal, the gifted Anne Malcolm. I'm Susan Owensby. Be well, do good work, be kind, and stay in touch. And remember, do not confuse human beings, our brothers and sisters, with their governments. Stay safe, my friends. Talk to y'all next week.
Waking to sounds of waves folding into the shore. I arise and look out on many shades of blue. Yesterday lingered. slips away. Thank you.